You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends. That can't be right. Hang on, there's some buttons here I've never pressed before. Let me just try these buttons and levers. Hang on, here we go. Alright, let's try that one. Anything? No. What about this one? That lever there. Oh, that did something. Hang on. Oh, right. Yeah. And that one. Uh-huh. What about that one there? Yeah. There you go. Something's happening now. Something's... Good Lord, it's Patricia!
Hi!
What?
Hiya.
What? And who's that with you? Who's
Ken.
What am I doing here?
Ken Deep?
Hello.
Good Lord, whatever happened there? Where have you been?
We were abducted by aliens. Sam was abducted by aliens. She is showing them cat pictures.
Okay.
Yeah,
that will probably
work.
She's
showing them pictures of your cats.
That'll probably work. Yeah, and Ken, how are you?
David, what am I doing here?
I think you've obviously here for a reason, Ken, and maybe that reason will.
We're all here for a reason, David.
Apparent, we are. Yes, we are. So, So welcome to the Stone Tapes. I'm not Sam Stone. It seems that she and Robin and Josh and George, are all still on the ship.
Yeah,
looking at pictures of. Cats
and puppies.
And puppies.
But mostly cats.
Mostly cats with aliens. So the absence of Sam is not a totally bad thing because it gives me a chance to play some of my favourite tunes. So we hope you enjoy the show. We opened with the fabulous vocals of the late Colin Verncombe as Black and Wonderful Life. And so let's... Well, I don't know how you're feeling, Patricia. Have you pulled yourself together now?
Yeah.
You haven't. You're in the right order.
I think all my atoms are here, present and accounted for.
You haven't got a strange fly's head or anything mysterious after the teleportation.
Let me just touch my. Nope. Yeah.
You look fairly normal.
Everything seems to be in order. Yeah.
So, what is it that you're looking at for this month?
Well, this month I listened to something instead of read something.
Wow.
This month I listened to a podcast.
Yeah.
It's called The Adventure Zone.
Are you allowed to listen to podcasts other than the Stone Tapes? Is that in your contract?
Yes.
Okay.
Don't tell Alex.
Shh. We won't tell Sam.
Don't tell Sam either.
We won't tell Sam. Okay, so the podcast is called...
The Adventure Zone, and it is gloriously nerdy because it's a bunch of people playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay.
Yep, there's these three brothers, and there's their dad... And one of the brothers is the dungeon master, and everybody else is a character. So there's one of the brothers is a human fighter, and the dad is a dwarven cleric, and the other brother is a wizard named Taco.
Is his second name Bell?
No, I don't think they've ever said what Taco's second name is.
I bet it's Bell.
Or if he has one.
I bet it's Bell. So this is something that you listen to. This
yes.
isn't.
Yes, it is. It's part of the Maximum Fun group of podcasts. There's a podcasting organization, and they have a bunch of podcasts.
Gosh.
I listen to a couple of them, and one of them is The Adventure Zone.
Okay.
I think it might be my favorite one.
So why is it your favorite one?
Because they're really funny. It's really funny to play Dungeons & Dragons. It is really funny to listen to other people playing Dungeons &
Dragons. So do you actually have to play it with them?
Nope.
You don't?
No.
Have you experienced Dungeons & Dragons, Ken?
Yes, I have.
So does this make some sort of sense to you?
A little bit. I'm kind of curious about it now.
Highly recommend. It's got some strong language in it, so maybe not the best for children, but it's hilarious. It's not all sword and sorcery, because that might get a little bit old after a while. What they did was they started with like a starter kit, like an opening adventure thing, and they were following along with that for about two episodes. And then Griffin, who is the dungeon master, just took it in his own weird direction. And there's like they're going around this continent of a magical place, and they're collecting these relics that are super powerful, and each one is in this different place. Like there was and they've got like a little story to go around that, and one of them was like Wild West, one of them was like there was a murder mystery on a train.
And is each one of these a different podcast?
No, it's all The Adventure Zone. They just have different adventure zones.
So how long is the podcast?
It's about an hour.
It's an hour.
Yeah, I mean, so far 66 episodes. So they've been, well,
66 hours.
Yeah.
Playing Dungeons & Dragons
That's
called a weekend.
I've played more Dungeons & Dragons on a week, actually.
Wow.
In like a day and a half, 2 days. Okay, wow. That's a weekend in university.
Wow.
Not sleeping, because university students don't sleep.
It sounds utterly crazy to me.
It is crazy, and it is fun. It is weirdly fun.
Yeah, I guess you have to be a real kind of geek to get this.
Not really.
This.
You don't need to know the rules or anything.
All right.
Because the players sure don't.
Okay.
Every time they cast a spell, they're like, wait, hang on a sec. Let me look that up. Okay. I do this thing.
So I thought Dungeons & Dragons, you kind of made it up as you went along. I thought that was part of the joy
half
of it. Of
making it up as you go along and half...
The world, the world building,
I mean,
and characters.
I think the people who more make it up, like do more for the story, mm-hmm. are more fun than the people who are just like, well, it doesn't say that in the rule book.
Right.
So these people are definitely more... Make it up a bit as you go along.
So would you recommend this for people that like perhaps don't necessarily play or understand Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah. Like, if you've ever heard the words Dungeons & Dragons and you're mildly curious about them,
right,
this would be a good podcast for you. If you play it all the time, this would also be a good podcast for
you. And where can
people
listen to this podcast?
Well, it's going to be anywhere you can find your podcasts, like iTunes.
So if you went into a popular search engine that begins with G, uh-huh. what might you type in to find it?
The Adventure Zone.
The Adventure Zone.
Yes, you would find it if you typed in The Adventure Zone.
And from the sound of it, you might give this quite a good rating.
Yeah, it's definitely 10 out of 10. It's, I would say, a real fire starter.
So we thought it would be a good idea on this edition of the Stone Tapes to look back at the last series of Doctor Who, which finished a couple of weekends ago at the moment. So it was a number of episodes, which I personally thoroughly enjoyed.
Me too.
And you enjoyed them, Patricia?
Oh, absolutely.
And Ken?
Yes, very much so.
So Ken enjoyed them as well. Ken does exist, actually. He's not a robot that we've programmed to say these things.
He's actually a Cyberman.
He's actually a Cyberman, really. But he thinks he's a human. He's a Cyberman who thinks he's a human.
Yeah.
So if you haven't yet seen the series 10 of Doctor Who, you probably don't want to listen to this bit, so go and, I don't know, listen to something else instead for a few minutes. So
Make a cup of tea.
But if you have watched it and you don't mind spoilers, then we'll have a quick chat about it. So it all kind of started with an episode called The Pilot, which was very interesting indeed.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I love the new companion. I love Bill. If I had a T-shirt that said, I heart Bill, I would be wearing it right now and I would never take it off.
Right.
Because Bill was awesome.
She was very, very well drawn, I think. She was a great companion. I think that first episode really worked well, I think, to introduce her, to bring her in.
Yep.
I mean, did you feel that, Ken?
Definitely. And I thought that the choice of renaming the episode The Pilot, which was originally was a girl with a star in her eye, tricks people into thinking it's a pilot for Doctor Who, and it really does make a fresh start.
It is a stepping on point, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you've never, ever, ever watched the series before, you could have watched that episode and kind of... You might have got a slightly twisted version of the series in that you'd think that the Doctor is a professor working at a college looking after the students, but he's a bit wacky.
But that's where he's been for 70 years, so that's what he
is at the moment. Apparently so. So throughout the entire John Pertwee genre and Tom Baker years, the Doctor
was
also in a university in Bristol teaching people. So the Axons are attacking over there and the sea devils are coming out the water
and
down there.
And he guest lectured in between them.
And the giant squawking time monster canary is attacking and the Master's doing all his stuff as Roger Delgado.
Well, he knows he doesn't need to do anything because he's already done
this already
stuff.
Doing it. He's already doing it. It's very clever. So, yeah, I thought the pilot was good. I actually thought... it's a bit of a weird thing to say. It was quite a female story. I thought it was far more about emotion and about what it was like to be in these positions rather than an action-packed, you know, rollicking monsters coming out the closets kind of story.
Well, there were some monsters.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she wasn't really a monster. She was just...
She wasn't really. She was a bit of a drip.
Wow.
Sorry about that.
So on my way here from the train station, there was a puddle.
Yes.
I did not look into that puddle.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case.
Just in case. Why is there water on the floor around your feet?
Okay, maybe I looked into the puddle.
Maybe you just did.
Maybe I looked into the puddle a little bit.
A little bit.
There was something wrong with
my
reflection.
But it was a nice idea in a way that this... this puddle of oil had just been sitting there waiting for someone to come and look into it so it could nab them as a pilot. It was all a bit strange from that respect, but sort of quite likeable in a way. And then it becomes the puddle from hell in that follows you all around everywhere and just wants to be your friend.
Well, it does what Stephen Moffat is excellent at, which is take something that we see every day and make it scary and foreboding.
Yes.
And I like that it was a slower pace story than we're used to from Stephen Moffat. It to steal a little David J. Howe, it drips the plot out slowly.
Yes, it does.
It gives you time. It really gives you time to get to know the characters.
Yes.
But from there, what I particularly liked about this season was that for many years now, I've been saying I far prefer Doctor Who when it presents individual adventures in space and time.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's what it should always be about. That was the very core of the series. And I think in recent years, it's sort of forgotten that a bit and has been presenting these great big arcs and complex, complex stories that all interlink. And you very much feel that if you miss an episode, well, there's no point because you'll never understand what's going on after that. This time, we had a succession of individual episodes, and I thought tremendous stories, nicely done, a nice difference. I mean, the pilot was kind of, I suppose, present day, sort of called it present day. And then we went into the far future for Smile and the little robots that would kind of kill you if they thought you were being unhappy, which was kind of cute. That was a bit scary and spooky, so I quite like that.
Great atmosphere, and once again, in although it's Moffat and his style of storytelling, which is take something that's so simple and so ridiculous and terrify you with
it. And I noted that very much the series did what the series did when Russell T Davies brought it back in 2005, in that we had initially a present-day story, and then we had a story set in the far future, and then we had a story set in the past.
Yep.
And it was very
followed
much
the format.
Following that format that works
it
so
works.
Well.
Yes. If it isn't broken, don't try and fix it.
Yes. Although I did feel that the one with the giant snake under the Thames was perhaps the weakest.
I don't know. I thought that was my favorite.
You enjoyed it, yeah.
I can't resist Regency costuming and adorable street urchins. I just
even if they
that's why
killed.
I liked that one. Only one of them died.
Oh well, that's all right.
Yeah, I like Thin Ice, and wasn't my least favorite of the season.
I don't know. I felt that the bad guy in it, he wasn't bad enough. He was far too normal a Regency bad guy. I mean, his biggest problem was he was a racist. His biggest problem.
Well,
his
biggest
problem was that
problem.
He was... No, it wasn't his biggest problem. His biggest problem was that he was feeding people to a monster.
Well, yeah, there is
that generally makes you a bad guy.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
David is empathizing with him.
I am. I
just because he has really nice boots.
Did he? I didn't notice.
He had lovely boots and a fantastic jacket.
David has fed some people to a monster. Once in his life. That's why he doesn't see that as a bad thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
I must admit, I also got a little bit confused about the snake under the Thames. I didn't quite understand.
I think it's like a very large anglerfish.
Yes, I know, I got that. I got that.
With baby anglerfishes?
But when you saw it on the TARDIS monitor, it was vast. It was like the whole of like the S of the Thames was filled with this snake thing. And then you've got that they're throwing... The head must have been under the ice at Tower Bridge, London Bridge, whichever one it was that was all frozen. And yet Mr. Man was collecting its poop to make into bricks, to fire furnaces, to... That was kind of the basic plot. And yet, would the poop then... Where, they would have been miles away down the Thames. Because doesn't the poop come out of the end of a fish? I don't know. Where does the poop come
out? Why do you make that assumption, Terry?
It's kind of under the...
But I don't know.
Well... At the
I don't know. Anyway,
at the beginning
anyway,
of
I'm
anyway,
thinking
anyway.
Too much.
I don't overanalyze it, but I just felt it was a bit kind of strange and weak in those respects. But I don't know. Did we go into the monk one next? Was the monk?
No,
one
we
next?
Went into what? Knock Knock.
Yeah. Ah, Knock Knock. Yes, that I loved. Although I thought the ending was very weak.
See, I didn't enjoy that as much. Yeah. I thought it was a good story, and clearly performances are strong. I just. It's not something I rate my Doctor Who on rewatch value. How quick am I to watch it again, or watch it again, or again, you know, and that's probably not going to be on top of my pile when if I had to pick an episode this season just to put on as comfort food or something.
Right. It wouldn't be there.
It wouldn't be there.
I mean, I had problems with a lot of it. It was very nicely set up and, David Suchet was brilliant. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I just felt that the resolution, that it was little insects, that alien insects that could somehow disassemble you and put you back together again and kill you or not. And it was, I don't know, I just felt it was, and why did she look like wood? I mean, none of the other people, I mean, the other girl didn't look like wood when she was reassembled. So
I don't know.
Are you keeping her alive? I don't know, I just felt it was a bit kind of strange. And I didn't understand why the trees moving when there was no wind had any relevance at the beginning. I didn't know what that actually... Were the bugs moving the trees?
I wasn't quite sure. I think the bugs were
wood.
Moving the trees.
Something
and they're all in
wood.
All yeah. Everything that was made out of wood. And the doctor thought it was creepy.
Don't know.
So he
don't
decided
know.
To be kind of creepy?
Possibly. He was being very grandfatherly.
Yeah.
Which led to lots of assumptions about relationships and stuff like that. So I think we're going to go for another piece of music now. And now the next track is something that I love, but Sam hates. Sam always said, if you want to play something Kate Bush, then play Kate Bush, she says. But instead, here's actually the video version of Utah Saints' Something Good. And if you've seen the video, then it will all make sense.
I was having a quiet pint with the wife, see? And this chap comes in like a lunatic.
It was the freshest move I've ever seen. Like he was floating on air.
I don't know what came over us. We'd go up and dance with him.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
So we're back with series 10, and the next episode was called Oxygen. So I think for me, that was so dark.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, you could. I think, you know, as the series progressed, it just sort of got darker and darker. I don't mean they turned the lights down. It was just so creepy. I mean, what did you think about that?
Yeah, and I like a space adventure, a proper space adventure.
Yes.
So that was great to see.
It was very sort of Ark in Space-y a little bit, you know.
A little bit.
Doctor companions arriving on isolated spaceship, don't know where, how, you know. I was a bit disappointed they had to have the MacGuffin of shutting the TARDIS away from them again. It was a bit kind of, oh, God.
Well, they did use that in, like, three different episodes.
Yeah, I know, but, yeah.
Hmm.
But I liked the idea very much. And people were going, oh, it's zombies in space. No, they're not zombies. You're missing the point. Mm-hmm. It's they are dead. It's just that the spacesuits are still moving.
Which is possibly creepier.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, zombies are pretty creepy on their own. Corpses, full stop, are creepy.
Yeah, yeah. We've met them on the stone tapes. So,
yeah. So that was creepy.
That was creepy.
But spacesuits with corpses in them is just, I think, creepier.
And I thought the whole kind of commercial element of it, the consumerist element of it, was extremely well done. In that, you know, who genuinely doesn't believe that if some company could find a way to charge us for the air we use, that they wouldn't do it?
Oh, they would absolutely
do it. Nestle is making a push for water rights on this planet because we, you know, the planet is... The majority of the planet is water, yet somehow they own
Nestle owns the water.
Yeah,
for
someone
some
owns the water.
Reason.
Great.
It's just...
So it's the same thing. If someone could bottle air, wouldn't they do it?
Wouldn't they do it?
The answer is yes, actually, they would.
Yes,
does
actually,
that,
they would.
Does
Nestle
that make
would
our
absolutely.
World better or worse?
Yeah, it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. Mm-hmm. We then moved into the three-parter in the middle of the series, which was a very interesting kind of... It's got a little arc of its own in it. And so the first episode, Extremis... It's kind of, we haven't got a clue what's going on. It's very confusing, very strange. We've got these weird monks. We've got these books that you can't read. And if you do, you go and kill yourself. All very mysterious. But it all seems to be resolved in that everybody was in like a Matrix-like alternative reality.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking the question, well, for how long? And they never answered that. Mm-hmm. They never told you how long they had been in that simulation. Which I thought was interesting.
Well, it's not like they weren't also in...
No, they were in the real world as well.
There was the real world, and then there was also the simulation.
Yes.
And the real world didn't know about the simulation,
That's correct.
The simulation thought they were the real
world.
But
how long were they in the simulation for?
All of human history, I think.
No. Was it back as far as Matt Smith's episodes?
Oh.
How long were we watching the simulation on Doctor Who? That's the question. And they didn't... Sorry. Just blown your mind. So I loved that episode. I thought Extremis was great. It was very well done.
It's fantastic. So when they announced that Paul McGann is back as the Doctor, because we went all the way back to the Eighth Doctor era, it will not come as a surprise to anybody.
Thank you, Ken.
All right.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm not pitching that, of course, of course I'm pitching.
So, yeah, but then we went to Lie the Land and Pyramid at the End of the World. I mean, it wasn't Pyramid at the End of the World. It was a pyramid in the middle of sort of...
Yeah.
Yemen or somewhere. I don't know where it was. Somewhere deserty.
It was made up.
It was
I didn't think that was a real country.
And it would seem to be very much a kind of a commentary on, you know, forces, opposing forces, and no one should really have the ultimate power because it wouldn't do anybody any good. And I felt it was just not, it was slipping away. The whole great premise of the beginning was kind of slipping away here a bit. And these monks seem so powerful. They can create a simulation which is exactly the same as real life that you can't even tell you're in a simulation. They have spaceships that can land. They have rays that can transport people out of planes, and they can move things about against gravity. They've got all this power, and they've got this thing that they can sell. Everything that's going to happen in human history, that's all there for them. And yet they want permission to take over. Well, they want to be asked. It seemed a bit...
One of the things that keeps stacking up with Doctor Who because of its long history is these the legends of different alien races that have had an influence on human history.
Yes.
And so what happens is they start stepping on each other. And so now you've added these guys in and their simulation and all the wonderful and powerful things they can do. Well, how does that fit in with some of the other things that we know? And then, as you were saying, it was kind of a swing and a miss. And on a personal level, I'm a Doctor Who fan for a bit of escapism. And I don't mind there being allegories in a story and using some modern things to tell some kind of deep message. But it was a little too much like the news of today.
Yes.
And
the fake news of today.
Yeah. And it just, you know, that and I, we haven't really given our review on this, but I thought this middle three-parter was really the weakest part of the season.
I think it was. And we went into Lie of the Land, where, again, it all just sort of fell apart. And it all rested on Bill's love for her mother, which seemed a bit weak. And again, the monks have now got control, and what do they do with it? They put up statues and they stand around and they don't do anything. So what was the point? I mean, quite apart from anything else that's going on.
Why did they want the Earth?
Why do you want the Earth? What was the point?
Setup is wonderfully strong. This whole idea of the simulation, and when people realize that life is a simulation, they just go and kill themselves.
Yes.
That is deep and rich, and you can mine that for so much more than part two and part three of the story really delivered.
I know, it didn't really deliver. But what did deliver was the next episode, Empress of Mars.
Yes.
I enjoyed that.
Which I loved.
I loved it.
Just thought that was brilliant.
Fun.
It was fun. It was imaginative.
Little touch of steampunk.
It was a steampunk thing. We had some great ideas. It had good monsters, good performances. Yeah. I just loved it. I thought it was tremendous.
Even the monsters' performances.
Even the monsters. The only thing I didn't like about it was that the Ice Warrior's feet clanged every single time they put them down. And they were on a sandy soil.
Wait, clanged on what?
They were like bong, 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 bong.
And they're on sandy soil. So it makes no sense.
And it's only consistent in that the previous story was on a submarine, which was metal.
Yeah.
And would make that sound.
Would make that sound.
But every previous story, they've walked along quietly.
Yes.
So someone there didn't say to themselves, you know what? They're on sand and they should sound like...
Exactly. Someone should have looked at that.
Yeah.
Eaters of Light, the Scottish one, was kind of interesting. I quite liked that in a way. It was a very different feel to the rest of the season, I felt.
It was.
Yeah.
I liked the fact that it was quieter. I liked the fact that it was a smaller problem.
Yes.
It wasn't like the Earth's going to end or whatever.
Well, those things could have
ended
the Earth.
They could, but it was a smaller problem in a way.
The
universe
wasn't
ending.
No, and I kind of like that.
The universe wasn't ending.
David, let me ask you a question. As someone who you and I are both very big classic Doctor Who fans, it's the return of Rona Monroe writing for the series, and her last episode was in 1989.
It was.
In the classic series.
Survival, yes.
With that gap and with her triumphant return, did you expect this as a story? Like, was this the episode she was destined to write?
I never had any expectations about what episodes are going to be like. I always take them at face value. I thought it was very good. It kind of had a bit of a Sylvester McCoy vibe to it.
Okay.
I thought to myself, yeah, you could probably take Capaldi out and put Sylvester in. You could probably have taken Pearl out and put Ace in, Sophie in, and it probably would have been the same story.
Okay.
They would have probably done the same things. The dialogue might have changed slightly, but they'd have probably done similar things. It kind of played out a little bit like a classic story, classic series story.
See, I pictured it just a little bit differently. I thought when that Stephen Moffat and his team bring back a classic writer, that writer has pitched something. He said, listen, I've been dying to tell this story. Mm. I've got something for you. You know, give me a chance on it. Something along those lines where it was going to be like... that's the best way I can put it.
But it explored a lot of things. I liked it a lot. I thought it...
I didn't dislike it. I'm simply saying I thought maybe my expectations were a little higher.
Perhaps they were. I mean, I think it was very... It wasn't spectacular. But if you want spectacular, you've got to come to the season ending. World Enough and Time and The Doctor Falls. And I tell you, I watched World Enough and Time, the penultimate episode, and I was the most disturbed I think I've ever been from watching Doctor Who.
The creep factor was set to maximum.
It was so creepy. But it was
like
just
a Silent Hill video game.
The concept of it, that this lovely girl, Bill, who you followed through all of these fabulous adventures, she can effectively be forcibly changed into a Cyberman, and she seems to have no say in it, and it just kind of, it's what happens to her.
And nothing that he can do about it.
And the doctor cannot do a thing about it. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
I thought that to have a director like Rachel Talalay,
yes,
who has worked on Doctor Who before, but in this episode in particular, was a stroke of genius to bring her horror expertise.
Yes. I thought it was lovely. And then The Doctor Falls obviously took that idea and then sort of just ran with it. And I really liked the concept that Bill still sees herself as human, so we see her as human, and then every so often we see her as a Cyberman that she
keeps reminding
really
us
is.
That
it's lovely.
It's just her vision.
It's so nicely done.
Well, you can get a little bit more emotion out of an actress than you can out of a Cyberman.
I loved that ending.
I thought the resolution was going to be that the doctor gave Bill the power to always see herself
as human.
Human, and that she would go and live somehow with that illusion, tipping the cap maybe to something like The Cage, the original Star Trek.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to move to some more music now. So we're going to have a little bit of New Order.
Yeah. is Ian McNeice, and you're listening to Siren 107.3 FM.
Tune in to Siren.
You're listening to Siren. This is 107.3 FM.
And this is the doctor telling you, so you must do it.
Exterminate!
To finish off the discussion of the last series of Doctor Who, we have to mention the last kind of couple of minutes of The Doctor Falls.
And the lead into the Christmas special.
Yeah, where he kind of leaves the TARDIS into a snowy wilderness. And there's this strange old man stumbling towards him out of the snow. And he gets closer. And he's only the first Doctor! What did you make of that, Patricia?
I don't know. I'll have to wait for the Christmas special and find out.
Did you realise it was the first Doctor?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did.
And did you go, woo?
There was squee.
Quietly.
Did you squee a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
And of course, played by David Bradley.
The wonderful David Bradley of everything from The Strain to Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, An Adventure in Space and Time, and now canon as the first Doctor. And this is not sacrilege, because the first Doctor has been played by a number of actors.
Indeed.
Of course, most famously and created by the perfect William Hartnell.
Yes.
But has been played several times. So this is not something new.
In the docudrama, The Adventure in Space and Time, we kind of saw David Bradley, he was playing William Hartnell, and we saw him playing William Hartnell
playing
the Doctor.
Yeah.
But now he actually is playing the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to wait till Christmas. We have to wait till Christmas to find out what happens.
Hope that they keep it to the two Doctors together. We don't need any companions. Let's let them be together and be wonderful together.
We will find out. Yes. Now, Ken, apart from being an amazing guest on our fabulous Stone Tapes podcast here, you run a very successful Doctor Who convention.
I do. I run Long Island Doctor Who, or as known by L.I. Who.
L.I. Who.
It's every November on Long Island.
On Long Island in New York. So what have we got to look forward to this year? And when is it? Is it November?
It is. It's November 10th, 11th, and 12th, 2017. And this year, Sylvester McCoy is our Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a rare U.S. appearance by Lala Ward, who you're spoiled with when here in the U.K. Smashy. She does several appearances here, but not so much in the States. And we have John Leeson joining us as well as Katie Manning was just announced, who is priceless, of course.
Yes.
Ingrid Oliver from the current series, and Michael Troughton is joining us.
You always have a very, very good lineup, and it's Sam and I have been, I think, to all of them so far.
You've been to all of them,
and they are always good fun, and it's always very friendly. You're very fan friendly,
very fan friendly,
and you make a lot of effort into making sure that's
the anti-Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Because, and it's no disrespect to giant cons, but this is a smaller convention.
Hmm.
About 1,500 people join us every year from all over the world. And it's about the community.
Yeah.
It's about us getting together and being a Doctor Who community, which we have a wonderful and long history of having a Doctor Who fan community.
So where can people go to sort of find out some more information if they're
fully
interested?
Spelled out, longislanddoctorwho.com is the website for any of the information on the event.
And there's a Facebook page.
Of course, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
All the stuff. All
Tumblr,
the things.
My face.
All the things.
Spacebook.
But would it be on The Circle? Which is a great link. That's a great link because our film of the month this month is The Circle. Now, this is a very recent film. It only came out this year, directed by James Ponsoldt and written by James Ponsoldt and Dave Eggers from his 2013 novel of the same name. Now, it's a great film. It's on Netflix. Other streaming providers are available, so you can find it there. Good Doctor Who connection. It's got Karen Gillan in, and Karen Gillan plays a member of the Circle. The basic idea behind the film is that the Circle is a Facebook-like corporation. Tom Hanks plays Eamon Bailey, who's the head and co-founder of it. And Emma Watson is in it as a girl called Mae Holland, who joins the Circle and kind of gets drawn in by her best friend Annie, played by Karen Gillan. So it's a Facebook-like company. But you put it very well when we were talking just before, Patricia. You said it's like if Facebook, Instagram,
and Google,
Twitter.
Yeah, what I said was it was like if Facebook and Google and Fahrenheit 451 and 1984 all got together and had a baby.
Yes, that's right. So it's a bit creepy.
It's deeply disturbing.
It's deeply disturbing.
Especially if you spend as much time on Facebook as
exactly.
I do.
Exactly. And what Dave Eggers, the writer, is doing here is it's very like Black Mirror. We both, Sam and I, thought it was like Black
Mirror.
Yeah,
it is kind of like a very
Charlie
long
Brooker
Black Mirror
series,
episode.
In that it takes the technology that we currently have of Facebook and the idea that everyone's interested in your cats and your pets and your pictures of your food and blah, 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 and that some people seem to spend their entire life on there, and it just takes it to the conclusion that everybody should spend their entire life on this.
Except for 3 minutes to go to the bathroom.
Except for 3 minutes a day to go to the bathroom. And they call it going transparent. And everything becomes transparent, from your emails to your texts to your phone conversations.
To your biometric data. Nobody needs to know when I'm sleeping.
Everything is transparent on there. And with this comes certain issues and problems that Emma Watson's character kind of starts to realize and uncover as we move forward. And I actually thought it was a brilliant, thoughtful discourse of where this is going, what's wrong with why it's going in this kind of direction.
And what's good about
what's
going on.
Good about it. But what we, Sam and I, both liked about the film was we came away from it and I was thinking about it for the next 2-3 days, thinking about, that's not right. That could be really difficult. Very, very fascinating. Very good film.
When was the last time a movie lasted in your mind more than, let's say, an hour after the movie?
Hardly ever. Right? Hardly ever.
Maybe Inception prior to that? Something where you were
Matrix,
kind of putting,
perhaps.
Putting the layers together.
Yeah,
in your mind,
something like that. Yeah. It's a good point, Ken. A thoughtful film. I liked it. I thought all the performances were good. Emma Watson, Tom Hanks, Karen Gillan are all very, very good. I did feel very much that Karen Gillan was still playing Amy Pond. She seems to be in Amy Pond mode for most of the film for me, but perhaps that's just because that's the way it was written. And it was just...
Maybe that's why
every
girl got her specifically.
Exactly. But she's very good in it. It's got some great moments. It's quite a horrific film in some respects.
Yeah.
It does go a little bit dark and deep in places. And it does ask that question do we really want everybody to know every single thing about every single moment of every single day of our lives? Is that really a good thing?
And who really wants to know that? The film doesn't actually go into
really
that
sure.
part of it.
See, and I think
I thought it sounded exhausting to be
it
so transparent
would have been exhausting.
All the time.
And in fact, I would say it could almost be a circus of death.
The sun. that forges their union is a substance known only to one. To the clown it is known as dominion. It's a secret that he'll give to none. The drug which gives the clown power means the circus can never be stopped, and his dream can go on unhindered till the last human being has dropped.
The Circus of Death by the Human League. And I think we've virtually come full circle, he says, referring the film again. So I think we've thank you very much. We've had a great time here. Thank you, Patricia. And thank you, Kendeep.
Thank you for
beaming in from whatever starship you were on and leaving Sam and her cat pictures behind. Thanks, of course, to our producer, Alex Lefchuk. I've been David J. Howe. And until next time, when hopefully Sam Stone will be back.
Yes.
This has been the Stone Tapes. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.